Second, one, two, three. Okay, we are now streaming.
All right, so this is a this is the Pacifica National Board meeting. This is actually a retreat. We're not in session. This isn't the business session yet. So no business is being conducted. We've got a number of new members seated. My name's Dave Adelson, and I'm right now the outgoing board chair. And in this session, what we're going to be doing is hearing from our foundation counsel and our human resources director about issues related to roles and responsibilities. And let me see here. This thing, let me bring the levels up. One, two. Could somebody in the room speak just so we're sure we have the right level for the streaming?
Hello.
Okay, I'll bring up those mics. With that, you know, I'm going to bring this over to you, Yolanda. And we can put this up on the dais so your voice is picked up. And off we go.
Good morning, everyone. And I'd like to say welcome to the new members and to the returning members. Welcome again.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Good morning, Yolanda.
Can you speak louder?
I sure can.
If possible.
Is that loud enough for you?
That doesn't go to any PA system, so
okay.
Talking into it does nothing for us.
Okay.
No, that must be yours.
I'll do the best I can.
This seems like an extra one. Yeah.
First of all, I want to talk about a message that I have from me to you, and it concerns serving as a director. Serving as a director does not come without obligation. It carries a strong need for commitment on your part. Serving as a director, however, should be an enjoyable and a rewarding one. So hopefully, new members, you will find some enjoyment in this process. With all that you have read, and I'm sure there was a lot of material that you've been handed or emailed or been privy to, you somehow think that, oh my goodness, what did I get myself into? This is another job, right? Don't worry about it, because it can't be that bad. Look at all the returning members, so it's not that bad. Why do we have repeat performers? Because they enjoy what you all do, right?
A few masochists.
Right. But to assist you as board members, our committees, which are created within your body, and really focus on that. You know, don't think that you have to be the go-to, the all person, because that's where you become burned out. So allow someone else with another expertise that you don't have to be that specialist in that area, but just assist and contribute. So that's why I say you don't need to really be deeply involved in every area of the board function. You can't be. You can't be good at everything. Even though some of us think we are, we're not. So in order to be, you know, proficient, try to give someone else an opportunity to take this role, take this leadership, and just try to specialize in areas that you can. And if you're called upon, you know, assist where you can, but you're still an active member. This is how the information and it flows to the larger board, and that helps the board become an effective one in carrying out your management and leadership responsibilities. Given that, I'm going to jump over not your role, but to my role as an HR person. HR person, I am to implement policies and procedures and ensure compliance. Compliance with federal, state, and local laws. Regulations pertaining to all human resources matters. I want to review and make recommendations to our ED for new and revised policies, procedures, and practices on HR matters. Communicate. Communicate the information to Pacifica team members on the policies, procedures that have been changed or have been implemented through a process of written communication, email communication, training, you know, with managers, as well as coordinate and conduct exit interviews. We don't currently do that. We need to do that. A lot of us don't want to hear, a lot of managers, supervisors, don't want to hear what this person has to say about them, but that's good to help us to grow so we can stop the behavior that had this person leave if it was not of his choice, of her choice, I'm sorry, but so that we can incorporate that into our system here and try to prevent that from happening, try to prevent having a revolving door and retain those employees who are key people. And we really need to focus on retention. Retention of good employees. Not folks who just want to show up and get that hefty Pacifica paycheck, but folks who really want to be here, who really want to make a difference. So we need to focus on that. That's part of my, responsibilities. Consult with legal counsel as required or as directed from ED, or again, as I said, as required. Collaborate directly with department managers to assist them in carrying out their responsibilities as far as the HR process goes, or their designated folks. Some folks have their business managers step in for that role and responsibilities, but I also feel it's a requirement that they need to be made aware of all the legal things. I know what we did in Pacifica a while ago was good and fine, but we've moved into another era and things have changed. But I was told, if I don't know if you've been made aware of this, but I was told, you're trying to be too corporate. You're trying to bring structure here. Mm-hmm. Well, no, not really, but since we have one HR person, we have many customers within the organization, I think that it's best that we speak the same language. So if A is doing this way, why couldn't B do it? You know, so it will make things a little bit simpler and less hectic. And email traffic could stop, and miscommunication can stop, and we can all have the same and dance to the same song. Right? That's fun. Have you tried it? Okay. Orientation of new employees. That's something that doesn't take place. A new employee comes on board. Hey, how you doing? This is where you sit. This is where you stand. Right? But nothing else goes along with that. Not good. You know, me as a new employee, I want to be treated with kindness. Hey, I made the right choice. That's really going to give me that to really get involved. This is cool. Right? A new employee comes on board. Give them a day or two to meet with different personnel of your department or respective areas. Have a new hire orientation where there's maybe a video or something on the history of Pacifica. Not all folks are privy to the Pacifica website and, you know, all the information that's there from history and history and history. But bring them up to date with the current information. This is who you call. This is what you'll need. You may experience this. This is all a part of a new hire orientation process. Not just sitting someone in there and saying, here you go. You didn't get it yet? What's wrong? Why isn't your report done? I needed this 2 weeks ago. Haven't you been told about that? So really, and then at the same time, check back in with that employee. Maybe a month later, 30-day checkup before the evaluation process. Is there anything that we missed, we omitted, that you were promised that you didn't receive? That's part of an orientation process. Also, my role would be to develop and maintain human resources record-keeping filing system. One which complies with federal laws and state regulation matters. Currently, a shame to say, we don't have that in tip-top shape, but we're working on it. We're working on it. But that type of information is some of the things that I do. I'm going to stop at that point as far as listing my HR responsibilities, because you'll think that I'm trying to pitch for a salary increase if I go on. So I'll just say, other duties as assigned, okay? Going to move on into the board orientation. I'm not sure if Dan or Dave have given you a list or provided you a list on typical duties of the board members' responsibility that probably came in your application package or process. But as a board member, I want to say, and this may be a repeat for those who heard it last night, believe it or not, you set the pace. You as board members, you set the pace. You set the pace, modeling a behavior standard that employees respect and intimidate. That's a good one. Somebody agree with me. That's a good one. That's a good one. Imitate.
Okay.
Imitate. Okay. Imitate. Okay. Employees, believe it or not, employees look to you as leaders of the foundation, believe it or not. And if there's no structure going on up here, they're going to act like wild children down here. You know, well, if it's going on there, I could do this over here. It's not a good thing. But project, and not to say that this doesn't take place, but just to keep it as part of our professional reasons that we are part of the board. There are certain general duties and responsibilities that all board members should adhere to, regardless of their particular position on the board. You are to understand and demonstrate a commitment to the organization's missions and programs. Keep up to date. Keep up to date with issues and trends that affect the organization. Prepare for minutes by reading your agendas ahead of time, if one so exists. Reports and other documentations that require your active participation. Attend meetings regularly. If you commit, commit. Sometimes we understand that you can't be there all the time, but let it be more than a time that you're there than less than a time that you're there. Contribute skills and knowledge by participating actively in your in work and in meetings and in your committee work. Make inquiries when clarification is needed. Sometimes we'll show up and say, okay, I'll just go along with the program and fully don't understand. And then once you leave that meeting, then that's when something sets in. You leave out the door and say, well, I thought she said or he meant. Get it straight right then before you leave out the door, because you have your audience right there. So the same information was disseminated at the same time, so there's no room for speculation. Now, once you get out the door, now, there are those who think that they could just say, well, excuse me, think that they could say that, oh, she meant this, because they wasn't tuned in. But be an active participant. Avoid any potential conflicts of interest. Understand and maintain confidentiality. Key. That's really key. We, our board members, are privy to so much information. As long as we're using it for the welfare of the organization, good and fine. But if we're using it for self-gain or some other kind of personal, whatever reason, not good. Even though we have counsel here who represents Pacifica, you could be legally bound to information that's disclosed in a different fashion. And also, your role is to ensure that the organization is complying with all legal and regulatory requirements. I'm going to move on to the relationship to staff, as you as board members. While you as a board are the legislative and judicial arms of Pacifica, Pacifica staff is the administrative team. The board employs the ED and the CFO, whom the board holds responsible for hiring staff of specialists to carry out reciprocal programs, as approved by you, the board, in a timely manner. Your relationship should be to the executive director as an advisory one, as it relates to other members of the staff. We may agree, we may not agree, but it should be. The relationship of the board, of a board member, is legislative as it affects the whole organization as a whole. So what you guys do affects all of us.
Yes. Could you expand on what you just said? Because I think when you said advisory, people were thinking we're a governing board. But what you're specifically saying is when we're talking about personnel to their supervisors as individuals,
That's correct. What I said, the relationship of the board member to the executive director, is an advisory one. So you are...
With respect to personnel.
But if I may, can I just put that on hold for a minute until we get into the board relationship a little more? Individual board members should not assume executive responsibilities. So whatever's falls under the umbrella of executive responsibilities should be held with the executive director. At the same time, staff members should not in any way decide matters that require your approval. So we as members can, employees can go out and make these changes and say we're going to do this without that affects the entire program without getting the approval from you guys first. At the same time, you guys as directors have the responsibility of approving information to us prior to us saying their name. Well, you can get our input, but it's not pretty much required. Did I? Okay. Then I'm going to go on to do's and don'ts. Your relationship as board members. Don't make commitments to staff. They'll try to wiggle their way around and say, oh yeah, I got AC on my side. AC, he's gonna be my person, my go-to person. AC got the know-how, he got the ins and outs, he know how to bring it home. Not good. Let's first go through the proper chain of command. If we can. Only a board can make a commitment. Only a full board can make a commitment. Not one board member. Don't act as a supervisor or superior to staff. Because then again, we're leaving out that chain of command, that process, and then that messes up the relationship there. You know, that reporting structure, that interferes. But do volunteer your help. Do go through the proper channels. Your executive director is the proper channel. Do show your concern for the well-being of all staff. But there's a fine line. Be able to disseminate. Do remind staff members that if they contact you, that they should follow the chain of command when they have a problem. And that they should not take their problems directly to you. I'm sure you guys have been somehow bombarded one or two or three times in your history here with incidences. But it grows into and festers itself into something bigger when we may have been able to solve it at this level here, if the proper challenge. And at the same time, you give an opportunity to flourish, a relationship to flourish between the manager, supervisor, and the employees without, you know, not to say we don't appreciate you all, but without you intervening at that point. When it's necessary, then you guys, really, and that's on a bigger picture scale. Then I want to move over to ethics. Be honest and ethical in your conduct, including all ethical handling of actual apparent conflicts of interest between personal and professional relationships. So we all have professional relationships with one another, with staff, employees, and we have professional ones. You got to be able to balance the two. And when I say personal relationships, personal is personal between A and B outside. That's your personal relationship, not personal within here. We try to keep it on a professional relationship while we're in this setting. We want to make sure that we protect and ensure the proper use of all company assets. All company assets, not only financial, but everything. Everything falls under that umbrella. We want to make sure we, as board members, be ethical in that process. You also want to comply with all government laws, rules, and regulations. Again, here's that word, maintain confidentiality. Maintain confidentiality on information entrusted to you or the listeners, except when authorized or otherwise legally obligated to disclose. Am I right so far? I see you nodding. Okay, help me. Okay. I'm leaning on you. Okay. We want to deal fairly with Pacifica Foundation suppliers, competitors, volunteers, and employees. That's a key one. Deal fairly. We want to provide information that is accurate, completely objective, relevant, timely, and understandable. So we want to take out of that self. We want to remove self, right? And don't put personality, personal opinions, but take that out of there. And make sure the information is delivered in a relatively timely and complete, accurate fashion. We want to proactively promote ethical behavior as a responsible partner among peers in this environment at all times. Also, I want to just forewarn that you, in your mission here, you need to keep your emotions in check and monitor your focus and your professionalism at all times. Again, that's removing self and keeping it professional. And because it's things or you were called out or someone said something to you that just did not feel right and you feel that, you know, you were looked upon in the wrong way, or Sean, or this group over here is against that group, remove self and look at the big picture. So we want to keep that in mind. The same time, I think it's an opportunity for us to open up for discussion if there's any questions that we can be. Yes.
Thank you very much, Yolanda. That was very helpful. I want to address a question to you about the terms here. Ensure the organization is complying with all legal and regulatory requirements. My question has to do with the necessity to have regular trainings in every signal area over issues like sexual harassment and so on. And my question is, does the HR department keep records of compliance with that requirement? That is to say, do you monitor whether certain stations are up to snuff in the trainings on not only sexual harassment, but there are some other trainings that are necessary, or even trainings around, well, I won't go into it. My question is, do you monitor whether we're complying with that, and which stations may be out of compliance, and do you send reminders, or do you send encouragement to general managers and others to take part in those trainings? Because finally, I might say, in lawsuits over those issues, I think Dan would agree, in lawsuits, plaintiffs can cite at times a lack of on-site trainings. And if we're not training people, if we're not complying with that, it gives plaintiffs another tool to hammer us with that our staffs are not having the benefit of regular training.
Absolutely. Good question. And in light of your question here, HR, if I may revert back to the roles and responsibilities of HR, this is a very unique organization, and HR is not one person. You have persons within HR who monitor benefits, who monitor safety programs, who monitor compliance issues of this nature, who monitor grievance process, union. But within Pacifica, we don't have that established. So for me, I do the best I can, and I know you're not saying or any light on me that this isn't taking place.
Oh, no, no.
Training has taken place on these issues, and when I first started out in Pacifica, I quickly, with the assistance and approval of Ambrose there, went to each station and did that. I do monitor, and it is a requirement that you keep track of all individuals who attended a mandatory training, right? The process has begun again. Now, with the California law, every new supervisory employee must be trained on harassment within the first 6 months of their tenure.
Right.
So that, divvying out the time that I have, I tried to focus on those new supervisory employees. But at the same time, given that a year has passed, it is time again to revamp another training. And we are enlisting a software program that will be incorporated into our system that each station on a yearly basis will be required to have all their employees in this training. It was scary.
Could you talk a little bit more about do's and don'ts of contact between board members and staff? And given that we're in public session, not specific examples, but kinds of things that have come into your office, just examples of things that we should be more careful of? Because naturally, there's contact all the time between board and staff, and there's some part of that that's necessary and desirable. At what points do we, as board members, need to be able to take a step back? And in saying that, I'll also say that just as a board member, I've had calls at times from people at stations saying such and such is happening, something needs to be done about it, and I just have referred them to the EP if it concerns anything.
You did good. That's
about personnel.
But right.
Do I have any other responsibilities if somebody calls me and tells me there's something wrong as a board member?
Right. Well, it's unique in two ways because you, in the position that you hold, you are the chair. And so if issues came to you against RED, that was the direct chain of command there because you would be reporting back to the board on your findings there.
So if somebody came to another board member about an issue, they should refer them to the chair, or any board member is appropriate for that?
Well, we need to have one person to disseminate that information. Everybody can't be involved in it.
But now, if it didn't have to do with the two employees who are specifically under the supervision of the board, or hired and fired by the board, namely the CFO and the ED,
right,
then it should be referred to...
It needs to go back through the chain of command. If that person, that employee is calling you and telling you that Greg isn't doing, Greg isn't saying, Greg is refusing, you got to refer that person back to Greg. Once that person is referred back to Greg and there's no resolution, then, you know, I need to get involved so we can put it on record that we need to...
And what happens if that doesn't happen?
It hasn't.
I'm saying, suppose somebody comes to any board member and says something that should be processed in a certain way from a personnel standpoint, and that board member doesn't say, you got to go here, what is the result or impact of that?
It can go, it could fall off the face of the earth, right? It depends on how adamant this person is about hearing, having his or her opinion heard, or it can develop into something really huge that we are not paying attention to, but it still needs to get some kind of attention, but not from every different board member.
And what kinds of things have come into your office about staff members feeling that board members have made inappropriate contacts with them without being specific? Okay. Or maybe we need to do a little more of this in exec session for you to be able to get some specific examples at some point.
Okay. Because it'll be kind of difficult. Okay, Lisa.
First of all, good morning to you, and thank you so much for this. I think when you were mentioning something, you said something, and I think that this is a problem with this kind of organizational structure. When you talk about structure, people automatically say you're trying to go corporate,
right?
And that is not true at all, necessarily. And one of the things, whether we like it or not, and as much as I hate the politics of the corporate world, but there is something to be said for how they develop, for their structure, organizational structure, and I think definitely organizational structure is so important. There's constantly ongoing training sessions, no matter what, on various things that come up, management, how you should do this, and I mean, very specific examples. I had to take something pertaining to a training in ethics. In the corporate world, that's an oxymoron. But anyway, we won't go there. But still, everybody had to take this online training, and they gave specific examples. If this happens, how would you do this? If that happens, what would you do? What continuously and online training? And I also think that it would help at some point, if it's not already in existence, but for the board directors to have like an organizational chart to understand more of ourselves. The chain of command, to understand, especially since I know many of us don't even get a chance to go to the headquarters, but to understand how certain things are. When we talk about HR, to understand, well, who exactly is that? What's in here? How do things get reported? If we have somebody report, because, I often go into my station and, I just go in there like, hi, I'm Lisa, how are you? And somebody might see me as this or that. If I get something reported as an LSB member, how should that be vetted? How can I direct them and say, well, did you take it here? Did you do this? Did you do that? And I think that we really need to have something like that, that just lays out a chain of command that we should try to instruct people to follow, and so we can understand ourselves as well.
Okay. I agree with you. I apologize for not knowing all the dynamics of how you as a board have been formed, because I've been told so many different ways and that this should happen and that should happen. And I'm assuming that you guys are way ahead of the game there, and you guys, have worked. But again, we can work on that. I'm sorry. Bob?
Yeah, two things. One is a follow-up on what Lisa said about understanding the process for issues that staff have. Maybe you could just take a couple minutes right now and tell us the general outline of if a staff member feels that either another staff member has treated them unfairly or a manager, what is their recourse? What are the steps in the process? And of course, that's going to be different at those stations with unions, because they have a collective bargaining agreement that has a grievance procedure. So obviously they should go to their union and take the steps there. But for those stations that don't have a union, what specific standard policy of steps a staff member should go through?
Okay. The steps that we currently have in place, if an employee has a grievance against another employee or their supervisor, they would, if they feel comfortable, they would go to that person. If not, if you don't feel comfortable because of fear of any sort of retaliation, you take someone with you, right, and confront that person. If you don't want to do that, do the confront, and, to squash out all rumors, because it may not be as major as you presume it to be, but then again, it can be. But you would go to Yolanda, and you would say, hey, this isn't going well. I can't get Dwayne to agree with this, that, and other. Yolanda would say, hey, Dwayne, that seems to be there's an issue between that's going on. Why don't you guys have a conversation? If need be, Yolanda get involved. It has happened. We had some type of intervention that took place within the organization, and it was settled at that level. But there's also been instances where it hasn't been settled, where I had to get Greg and Dan involved.
Just to clarify one point, so if you're having a dispute with another staff member, wouldn't you first go to the general manager before you go
yes.
to you?
Yes, I said that. I said that.
Maybe I missed that.
Okay. Yeah, sorry.
All right, no. Now, on another subject, do you think there's value in having some kind of training at all stations on conflict management?
Yes.
And do you have any plans to have that happen soon?
Yes, but it's going to take, not just can't happen, we have to figure out, I don't have a budget or a line item per se to get a professional individual to come to the station to deliver the same information, not just to New York, but to D.C., so that we're all under the same umbrella. We, right now, currently, we decide that this needs to happen at W, and then we say it needs to happen at K. We get two different bodies delivering that information. I would like to see it, again, structured, you know, the same information disseminated across the board. Right here.
Just a note on time. It's now 11:50, and we're going to 12:30, so we've used about half the time. We are going to have a section with Dan, so maybe we do this for another 10 minutes, and then we'll have half an hour for Dan's presentation.
Here. Right here. Yeah.
Okay, one quick thing on trainings and then on the handbook. We had a very, very good and productive meeting at KPFK last week with the staff, and we talked about one of the things we discussed had to do with trainings. And it seems, you know, I agree about the need, you know, for training, which is important. I also think, and the sense we got certainly from the staff is that they also want to have some input into the type of training that they think is necessary. Because if you impose a training on a staff that isn't really ready or receptive or doesn't feel it's necessary, then frankly we're going to be spending money and it's not going to work. We had an anti-racist training at our LSB, and my personal view is that following that training, more racism was there than before the training. You know, so I think we have to kind of, you know, look at that in terms of trainings. On one thing that did come up are the handbooks. I'm new to the board, so I'm feeling my way. I don't know if it's something to raise here, but there was some concern about the updating of handbooks that people thought would be useful and for differentiating what applies to paid staff and what applies to unpaid staff, for example, and people thought that was something that would be useful. So I don't know if that's something in your purview mm-hmm. or kind of how that would be addressed.
Right. The handbook issues? The handbook needs revision, major. We're working with an outdated handbook. Again, it's timing. And I agree with you. I would welcome individuals who it affects, mainly affects their input on what it is where we're going before you. That's how you get folks to buy in. Mm-hmm. It's not all, I don't have all the answers, you don't have all the answers. I think what's key to building a solid team is having everybody's input, everybody be on the same page, and as well with the handbook. Started the process in 2005, but some way or another, it kind of fell by the wayside. It didn't make it to the priority list, even though it is a priority. But my thing with the handbook is we can say what we want to be in there, but I had suggested early on and later on in 2005 that we solicit information. We don't know what goes on and works at KPFK, what they need. You know, we don't know the things that go on daily there. So if we compile all that information and then we can have a solid handbook. And there's no way that an employee can say, oh, I don't agree with that. I didn't know that existed. Yes, you did. You bought into it. You had your input. And that's why, again, if you know, with the forms that was presented to you, having employees sign off in the new hire orientation that they did receive an employee handbook, we can push down our litigations, because there's no way you can say that you didn't know that this existed. You signed off on it. Now, whether or not you read the book or not, that's on you, but you don't have a case here. Okay, one more than you, Greg. I'm sorry.
Concerning personnel files,
yes.
You know, organization, it's my understanding that the local boards, you know, the local stations, you know, are not giving you these things properly so that you can file them at the national office. Is this the way it's supposed to be, and how can we help, and how can the stations help to give you those files, or personnel files?
Okay, if I heard you correctly, that I don't have the correct documents for
personnel files? On personnel files from the stations.
Right, that's true. But we are moving toward that process. A couple of stations have complied after many requests, because this happened when we moved from DC to the national office to Berkeley. All of the information didn't move with it. So when I came on board, I noticed that K had their records, A had their records, we had nothing. So I requested copies from all the business managers, general managers, of each employee's personal record. And what I was astounded to find is that we didn't have anything on a lot of folks. Right? We didn't have a resume. We had just a letter in there that said da 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 da. And who is this person? How did they come on board? Right? So we are in the process of pulling all that together, as well as an employee database.
Does that also include so the process of hiring, sometimes, you know, when people do not know how the process works, you know, we feel to think that there might be certain, people, you know, getting jobs, you know, because they're fighting for others. And so the jobs are not passed properly, the interview process, all this documentation, is that on the file?
Well, before we go any further, I have a little concern that some of these discussions may be things that ultimately could play into personnel actions. Dan, could you comment on what kinds of things we should be talking
but
about?
But can I answer his question on the hiring process?
I just want to hear from Dan quickly whether any of this discussion is something that should be in an executive session or not.
I don't see why.
You know, I think we can talk about our procedures, but anything that might be seen as a confession might be used against us.
Okay. So that would be the special confession. Okay. Next question. Right here.
Okay. Just to clarify, yeah, if we had to hire consultants to do, say, management training and that kind of thing that was not being done by staff, we would probably at some point have to come back to the board for a budget adjustment, because we don't really have provision in the existing budget for that sort of thing. We've never, you know, separately, created a line item for that. But my question to you is just to clarify a little bit, the relationship between HR and staff, paid staff, is clear. Less clear is as you perceive it, the relationship and the responsibility, if any, of yourself or anyone else working in HR to the board, because sometimes you'll get requests from the board to be involved in governance processes or governance related processes. So how do you perceive that? And then also with the election process, to what extent are you, or do you think that HR should be involved in election processes? And in particular, I think you've had questions around the lists that are created.
You took up the 10 minutes. It's time to go.
I want to answer that question. I don't think it's confidential information, but it's a procedural matter, and board members will, from time to time, want to enlist in your involvement,
right,
in, you know, governance-related matters, and so how do you deal with that?
Right. I work, my job, again, is employee relations, should be per se. But again, with our unique organization, everyone is a customer, and everyone requires the attention. And if they don't have that information within your body, where else do you go? I mean, but my only request to that is that if the different, the many unions or committees that you have, not every three people from that committee call a request. If you can have one leader, you know, take the ring and say, I'm going to call to request that information, that's acceptable, but not from 50 people on the same.
I'm really glad that the board, this may be late, but I'm glad the board engaged your position, because I know we needed you, you know, or we do need you.
Thank you.
But I wanted to, I want to make 2 points. One, probably in passing, this idea that that staff should not come to us when they have their problems. I politic with the staff. I put flyers in their boxes and I've asked them for their vote as a staff rep. And when they come to me with a problem, I feel like the structure of our democratic structure asks us to stay informed. So to say that they should not take their problems directly to board members, you know, I'm not sure I could say that, but I do recall telling staff members to follow procedures and keep me informed. And I try to watch myself as using the governance side of things for the political, you know.
Okay.
But anyway, what I wanted to point out is that in Houston, I don't believe that we have a real process in place where we can take our management review. Do you find that there's a little lack of procedure there when we actually stop the politicking and we get in a room, you know, and we can actually talk to each other and do management review? You know, we come up with something, and where does that go? And how is that working? Do we have a way of tracking the effectiveness of the program director and the station manager?
Well, I'm going to throw that on Rick, because it comes up and it's...
That's a duty of the local board, as we know.
Right.
We have to do that.
Right, absolutely.
According to the bylaws.
I would call it uneven. I think it's a matter that I don't think it's appropriate for the discussion in a public session. I have seen the process at two stations during this year. So let me say I have not seen the results of the management review process at all stations, and they do vary. That's about all I really think I can say.
Can we talk about the process of how it is, or how it should be, or how, or that we don't have a process for this?
I'm saying that it is not uniform throughout the network. It's managed at the local level at this point, and it varies in terms of its timing and what the content and what the procedures are. That's about all I really think is appropriate.
Evelyn,
and
then you.
I guess my concern too is not just with what we request from you, but what you also need to get from us as a PNB, because sometimes we make decisions that affect HR, and that information never gets processed or sent forward. And I, what would you like to see us do in terms of making sure that you have the most up-to-date information when we make changes, and then we don't tell anybody?
Okay. Well, I think I should be able to get that information from my direct supervisor. You know, the requirements or requests from you as a board.
Okay, so like when we change something, if there's a procedure in place and we change something, then we need to make sure that Greg also has all of that information so that he can pass it to the HR.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and there have been some difficulties in communication from local station boards and to some extent from general managers in getting information about the activities that you're conducting at the local level. Again, it's been different and at different levels at different stations.
Okay, sorry, one more. Rob? Rob has been waiting for you.
Thomas has had his hand.
That's all right. Don't worry about it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go right ahead.
Okay. One
of the things that I think it is our role in the board to do is to set policy. In the area of personnel, I think one of the areas where there are constantly problems at the local stations is where there are no standards in place or where people in management make decisions on an ad hoc basis that create conflict within the staff. So, for example, why are some positions called something that involves supervision? Other positions are called the same thing and there's no supervision. Everybody needs to have job descriptions and they need to be accurate, but we know that that's not the case. There should be some staffing requirements that all stations have, so that if I want to start creating a bunch of positions that have nothing to do with the basic day-to-day activity of the station, before, you know, that before I fulfill the things that are needed, that's going to be a concern. Also, occasionally, the way in which hires are done for certain employees are different than the way they're done for other employees. And I think that employees that get into dispute situations, an employee, whether it's a paid or an unpaid staff, that feels that he or she is being abused or harassed, frequently has no information or no description of what recourse is there. So there is nothing, on the one hand, that tells managers what are the guidelines and procedures that I have to follow, and on the other hand, there's nothing that says you have to be accountable for providing employees with certain recourse and certain information or doing it. And it gets very tricky around programming issues where people are put in and out of programs either punitively or for not punitive reasons. There's no documentation there. And then there's no process that would support the documentation. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that would help us would be to understand how to set policy that addresses some of those issues so that we can say, this is what you're expected to do when you do an evaluation, when there is a dispute, or every employee should have certain information about their job, what their job description is, what their performance rating is, and if there's not, this is what they do. And those are the sorts of things that would help us do a better job so that we don't get dragged into case-by-case disputes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One more thing. Do you want to comment from me on that?
Sure. I mean, if you want to, you don't have to.
Okay. Pacifica, each station runs itself as its own entity, pretty much. The focus hasn't been too much on you being able to tell Ron how to do this, or me being able to tell Eva how to do this, or whatever. So everyone is really doing their own thing, pretty much. And so when policy is put out there, it's not adhered to. So what authority do I have as an HR person to say, cut this, we need to stop right now, it's not going to work? They're going to look at me and say, well, we've been doing this for forever. So, and that comes into play because of the fact that with our ED being gone and managing each station per se, and I don't know if this is something that needs to take place, but I think there needs to be more involvement in the stations in order to get these policies out there and to say that, you know, this is what we're going to do. This is the rules we're going to follow. Information has been put forth to board members, to the board, but not blaming anyone, but nothing has been done. We rushed in 205 to get a lot of this information that's now coming to surface, but we didn't put it on our priority list. And so I'm sure some of you guys have those big binders from 205 back in the day. There's a lot of that information in there, but it just hasn't been implemented, and I don't know where to start. If I say, here it goes again, it's like, wait a minute, we just got this, you're killing another tree, or we don't have time. I'm really kind of gray in that area as which way we want to go here. So right now we can stop what we're doing, say policy hiring, that's our major issue, and we need to focus on that, and we could put everything else aside, the handbooks and all these other times, but I just need to know where we need to go. Just one more, please. I'm sorry.
I had two comments. I hope we can handle briefly. My first thing is, I understand we're in the early stages of growth and development, so there'll be problems, and I appreciate the policy guidelines that you laid out today. But as a question, how long do you expect that it'll take before we tighten up our personnel management and management structure so that we don't have the problems that you outlined today and so that we better manage all of this?
Well, we can. It can be a number of two things for that, to solutions to that. We can either get some assistance that can help in the day-to-day functions that I do, or the fires that come on a daily basis that need attention right then, or we can do a priority list. And if we want to set that, if you want to assist in setting the priority list, I'm open.
My second thing. So you're not clear. It depends on which course of action we take, right?
Well, I'm doing what I could do on a daily basis, but if it doesn't fit into your unclarity, I'm clear. I'm pretty much clear.
Okay, so how long do you think it'll take?
Take to which one? There's a lot.
Let's say we set a priority. How long do you think it'll take before we straighten out these management problems, these personnel management problems?
Again, I'm going to say that there's a lot. So which area? There's a lot within that one sentence that you gave me there. We could talk about hiring. We could talk about employee database. We could talk about management doing the same thing across the board. So
that's what I was talking about, all three of them. That's what I thought you were addressing.
Prioritizing.
I just want to say we have a personnel committee, and one of the things that's going to be in there and purview is clearly going to be to bring to the board this question of what priorities and what order. So maybe we can answer that question a little better in the next month or two.
Good enough.
That was one. You had another question.
The other concern that I had was after you gave that very good outline about how we ought to deal with problems that come from staff and I guess from people who have radio programs. That made a lot of sense, but I could think in my own mind some exceptions. You know, if someone comes to me and say, you know, I hear Greg is really real tough guy. I don't like him. You know, can you help me? Yeah, I might say, you know, probably I'll take that to, you know, go through the process. If you're having a personal thing, if there's a grievance, take it through the grievance process or call them up and work it out. But if they come to me and say they're being sexually harassed by Greg, the person to deal with that, unless we have a sexual harassment process, is someone. There's nothing over Greg,
right?
But the board.
Right.
Similarly, if someone comes and says that someone of high rank has defamed them and accused them of stealing money from the Pacifica, okay, and they're not saying sexual or racist harassment, so it's not illegal discrimination.
Right.
They're not saying, I don't like this person, or he doesn't like me, or she doesn't like me. They're talking about something that's the next step, and probably the only step if it's not resolved is to file a defamation action in court. So, again, it seems to me there might be some situations where a board member might, of course, bring it to the executive director's attention, but to the chair's attention, and also ask that the item be put on the agenda for our board meeting in a closed session. You weren't talking about that sort of stuff.
No. That's
trifling, mundane stuff.
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. Thanks a lot. No. That's all.
And for clarification, there was an addendum to the existing employee handbook that was generated during the past year by Yolanda that deals with anti-harassment policy on the complaint procedure, which is very detailed and is actually in the big fat book you have in the administrative procedures section. So if you want to take a look at that, you can revisit it. It's number 5 in administrative and personnel policies, which is tab number 6. So it's number 5 and tab number 6.
Okay, you've got 20 minutes left. Actually, 19. And just a comment that the problem is that there's more stuff to deal with than that the body can ever deal with. So I don't mean to be rude when I cut off anybody, but there's always 7 more good questions that will happen, and some of it, we're going to keep to the agenda. We just have to say, okay, now we move on and come back, and we decide what our priorities are. So you have 18 minutes because I just sucked up another minute.
Okay. I'll be quick.
Unless the board wants to cut into their lunchtime a little bit, 5-10 minutes.
Where are we meeting this afternoon?
Pardon me?
Where do we meet?
Well, we're going to, after lunch, we're going to come back to this room and meet until about 10 minutes to 4, and then we're going to take a bus over to the Houston Media Source and do the last portion of today's agenda over to the Houston Media Source before we have dinner and then the business meeting beginning at 6:30.
Okay.